Oasis Podcast Episode 19, Big Brother's Back, and a talk tonight with Brian Fallon. Welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. And you heard it right. Yeah, coming up on the show today, we have an interview with genuine rock star Brian Fallon, lead singer best known for the Gaslight Anthem, plus other projects, and his own solo album, which came out last year, which was really well received. So a massive thing for me to speak to Brian, and an absolute pleasure. He's a really good guy. And yeah, great little interview. It ended up being a little bit shorter than I expected because the line I was speaking to him on kept sort of cutting out a bit, which is frustrating because there was some more really good stuff that I couldn't really use. But hopefully what I've put together makes a lot of sense. And Brian's an absolute top man, and he said he'll come back on again. We'll do a part two, and we'll hopefully maybe do that over Skype, so it'll be a bit more legible throughout. So apologies, the quality isn't great. I think it's I've put it together as best I can. So anyway, I hope you enjoy it, and please do get in touch. And any sort of Gaslight Anthem fans that are joining us for the first time, welcome aboard, and please stick around for the other episodes. So before we get on to the Brian interview, just we catch up as we always do these days when there's so much going on in the world of the Gallagher brothers with what's happening with the guys. So the big thing over the last week was Noel playing with U2 at Twickenham, which was massive. Got a sort of a bit of a mixed response, really. I think a lot of people, it was sort of disappointing to see Noel, who is, you know, a legend and a superstar, playing sort of support fiddle to a band. And yeah, and sort of a sort of semi-disinterested crowd there, kind of, I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me. I don't like to see Oasis. Even when it was BDI, I didn't like to see them supporting people. I like to see the, you know, whether it's Noel or Liam headlining the show in front of their fans. Obviously, it makes a lot of sense for someone like Noel to play with U2 because that's his audience, that's his crowd now. People are going to go out and physically buy the CDs, and U2 fans have probably got a few quid in their pocket. Maybe they haven't got the Noel albums, and maybe now they will go out and buy them. So it does make a lot of sense. But yeah, and a few people have weighed in on Twitter. That's been quite entertaining. Yeah, the one interesting thing that happened, so Noel played, he played a set that was relatively safe. He didn't bring in anything new. He brought back Little by Little that he hadn't played for 4 years, I believe, which was good to hear. And he didn't play Don't Look Back in Anger, which was very strange. But then obviously what he then came back on and did was he played it with U2 as the encore. And it was an interesting performance. I mean, Noel is consummate professional and sang it perfectly, as he always does. But the Edge absolutely butchered the guitar solo. So let's have a little bit of the Edge and Noel now. So of the people that had to criticise Noel for those U2 shows, unsurprisingly, one of the main critics was his little brother Liam, who was quite rude about him playing with Noel and calling him beige and potato and all the usual things he does. And yeah, and Liam was in the news himself. He played another couple of festivals. This time he played in Serbia, and he also played in Belgium. So, and the big change to the set was that he played Wonderwall. So we hadn't heard him play Wonderwall yet. So let's have a little bit of that here.
So it's Wonderwall or it's fuck all.
So great to hear Liam playing Wonderwall, and certainly better than he sang it at the Olympic ceremony, that's for sure. Just quickly, a couple of iTunes reviews have come in the last week, so thank you very much for everyone who has done the reviews. We have had 5-star podcast series by The Editor, full of entertainment and information for the hardcore Oasis fan, brilliant. And The Ultimate Oasis Pod says, Ginky Boy, the essential podcast for all Oasis fans, far and wide. Great contributors, and the presenter knows his stuff. Hashtag live forever. And that's from Steve. And then a must for any Oasis stroke music fans by Red Dave 10. A great pod and a must for any Oasis fan or music in general. Great stories and insight into one of the greatest bands of all time. I found it so refreshing to hear stories and people's experiences, and loved how I could relate to them myself. The guests so far have been great, and even when not talking about Oasis, they still have great stories to tell. I would recommend it to anyone who likes a bit of nostalgia, and guarantee it will make you smile and bring back some great memories. Roll with it. Thank you so much, Red Dave 10. And we've also had a couple of reviews from the American iTunes site. So thank you very much to our cousins over the Atlantic. So we've got Inside Light says, great podcast for longtime fans and anyone who wants to learn more of the band's story through the eyes of those who were there at the time. Top-notch guests, not only brings back a flood of memories when Oasis were active, but adds something new to the mythos with each guest. We might never get any new music from Oasis, but these stories at least fill that void for new material. Cheers. You're welcome, Inside Light. And then the 21 Pilots podcast, Christopher Robinson says, Oasis are top of the mountain for me, and the Oasis podcast is something I was missing in my life and didn't realise it. James also inspired me to create my own podcast, and for that, I'm extremely thankful. Keep it coming, mate. I can't wait for the day you get Noel on. Well, thank you, Christopher, and as we've mentioned on that before, he puts together a really, really good podcast about 21 Pilots and then about music in general. So if you're into music podcasts, as you probably are if you listen to this, then you should really go and give him a listen and support people creating music podcasts. And if you're enjoying this, set up your own. It's really easy. You can just speak into your phone. That's what I did. I have actually bought a microphone now, but all you need, there's free software out there you can edit on. You can just do it straight into your phone, put it straight up onto the internet. And there's just not that many music podcasts out there. So if you're into whoever it is, Stone Roses, Pulp, Blur, Spice Girls, I don't know, go out there and do your own music podcast and get in touch with me. I'll happily tell the world about it. And you never know, you might get to meet your hero, you might get to speak to them. and while I haven't yet got to speak to Liam or Noel, I have today, and here's the segue, got to speak to Brian Fallon. And so let's go on to hear from Brian now. So I really do hope you enjoy this interview. As I said earlier, it was an absolute pleasure to speak to Brian. And I tried to get through as many questions as I could because I'd gone on to Reddit and Twitter and asked for people's input. And and so if I didn't get to your question, I'm sorry. As I say, we are going to do a part two at some point. So get back in touch with other questions or any follow-up questions. And maybe we can get it on next time. So Anyway, after this brief musical interlude, here is me talking to Brian Fallon. So joining me now on the Oasis podcast is very exciting. We have got an international rock star, which is Brian Fallon of the Gaslight Anthem and of various other projects, including his own solo stuff. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Good. Well, you are more than welcome. And obviously this is the Oasis podcast, and that's what we're all about. But it's something I've wanted to do for a little while, is because I know there is plenty of, people that have been successful in all kinds of walks of life that are big Oasis fans and love Oasis and have got stories to tell. So, you know, a friend of mine on Twitter, a guy who goes under @NoelGallagherWares, Twitter, I think you've had a few back and forths with, sort of said, oh, you really need to speak to Brian. And here you are, which is absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. They give me a lot of help when I'm looking for just something to wear. That's a good thing. Some people have, you have your musical influences, but you also kind of need to be a bit of a jacket influence and a sunglasses influence.
Absolutely. And is it Noel particularly or over Liam that there's a fashion influence for you?
It's funny because it all started for the jam for the first time on pictures that I was kind of like, well, I can't wear a suit and I'm just not a suit guy because I'm the kind of person that'll rub up against the wall and the suit will be yellow. So it's just, I'm not, a little clumsy. So I started to notice that like I'd liked Oasis as a band, but as they got older, they started just looking cooler and cooler, both of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, you guys look great. Like, this is like, I want to look like, I think probably 10 or 12 years older than me. And I was like, you guys look fantastic. And this is where I look like that. And the things that they would wear, I always find was so cool. So they're both kind of a little bit of an influence. I buy a lot of clothes from Leah, actually, which is strange because Noel tends to be the one that I look for like, all right, well, what kind of jacket is, how did he match that? You know what I mean? Like, everybody does it, though. Some people will not admit that, like, especially musicians. They won't say, a lot of musicians, they try to, especially with music or with clothes, they'll imply that they've made this all up from nothing. I've created it from the murky dust and I evolved to this magnificent creature, unscathed by influence of any kind. I mean, it's just like, I'd rather tell people because it's part of the thing that they can go find. But they're like, if they think that something I do is cool, the first thing I want to do is be like, oh, I got this from this person. What do you think? Like, or go check it out, see what you think,
Absolutely. It's that, people, I think some people want to sort of believe it's all magic and it's all kind of, they don't let you look behind the curtain. And no, it's like with me and even on the podcast, I'll happily say, oh man, I had like X thousand downloads or whatever. And I'd rather people knew the mechanics. And then, because then it's like, well, there's more of an affinity for you as a person, creating something, isn't there? Maybe even, I don't know. But Yeah.
Well, it's also that fan mentality, It's you never lose the fan in you. When you start as a kid and you get into whatever you get into, you're a fan. And I think that I would still consider myself, even if I was surrounded by a group of musicians, I would still consider myself the fan in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's cool. But, taking it back, just the first thing I was going to say is what's going on in your world at the moment, but I know what's going on because you've recently posted sort of two or three snippets of new songs, which is sounding very exciting. So what's happening there?
Well, we're I'm in New Orleans recording a new solo record right now, and we've been down here for about 4 weeks, and so we're in like the last week of recording.
Okay, and how's that sounding?
It's awesome. We're at the part where we get to clap and snap over everything, you know, like snap our fingers, which is surprisingly hard to do for a full 3 minutes.
Snapping fingers for 3 minutes, that sounds, yeah, that sounds tiring.
Yeah, there's a little muscle in your thumb that will, you didn't know existed, and then you try and snap, and it's a new pain.
Could you not just record one good snap and then loop it, or was that a no-no?
Yeah, you know, you could, but I just don't think that's what Elvis Costello would have done.
All right, well, when I get Elvis on in a couple of weeks, I'm sure I'll ask him, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, out of all the questions you can ask, definitely start with the snap thing. That'll really spark his interest, you know?
Oh, God. Well, you know what I'm really excited about is when this is released and all the Gaslight Anthem fans and all the fans of your solo stuff just absolutely rip me apart because I'm not kind of like a super fan and I don't know every single thing about you guys. It's like, look, you came on because it's the Oasis podcast, man. What can I do? But, hey, but no.
Yeah, that's fine. No, they're not going to rip. No, they're good people. They're usually very, very good about everything. We have good fans. It's actually a really nice thing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, as I've mentioned, I've put out on Twitter, I'm sorry, on the Twitter and also on the Gaslight Anthem Reddit page that I was going to be speaking to you. And, yeah, it's been a phenomenal response. And so I'll definitely read through a lot of those in a bit. There's some really good questions from those guys, and I'll definitely try and give as many shout-outs as I can because, you know, as I say, I think there's some bands where people do feel a real affinity to the artist, like, and Oasis is definitely one of them, and I think you and Gaslight Anthem definitely is. I think that's, you know, you get that feel that it's not, you know, there's a heartfelt quality to what you do, both in your music and the way that you interact with the fans, that yeah, people know it is, you know, it's different. It's different to, you have that Oasis have as well, I think.
Well, I think, you know, you started out doing it for the same reasons that they started out listening. And I think there's not really much of a separation.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I mean, taking it back then, right, I mean, so you're, me and you are the same age, actually. You're born 1980, right?
Yeah.
So you're, we just talk about, like, I mean, British music specifically. So what were the first kind of British bands that really, really appeared on your radar growing up?
Well, I mean, when I was really young, it was the Rolling Stones and The Who. My mom had cassettes of that. So she said, you know, here, like once I started showing an interest in music, she said, you know, you've got to listen to these bands. And so she gave me Who's Next, and she gave me that Hot Rocks compilation of the Rolling Stones. It was like a pretty quick education in like things that are amazing, and from that I sort of looked and just, you know, I would just look at like the covers that they did or who they were into, and then that kind of led me into other bands. And then as I got older, I remember hearing like that band The Laws, yeah. With that There She Goes on the radio. And I really liked that sound, and at the same time, I kind of found the Smiths by accident, I think, or somebody made me a tape or something, and I found the Smiths. So, but back then, it was, you just had to find tapes, and you couldn't really, there wasn't the internet or anything, so you had to just kind of go by what you found. And then that led me into, you know, Joy Division and all that, and New Order, and then I kind of, I don't know, I just found it to be really cool, and it all stemmed from that and then the Clash, but I found this common thread through all of these bands that they took a lot of influence from very American blues artists, yeah, and then created a new entire thing. But at the same time, they were fans. That's the one common thread I found through every band that I don't know, shaped my youth. You know, was that even the American bands too? That they were all fans of music. Like even you take Pete Townsend or Bruce Springsteen or anybody like that, and all they want to do in interviews is talk about the bands that they loved.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't want to talk about the new album. The record company sitting in the corner saying, "Plug the new album."
Yeah. So I had that in the forefront of my mind from a very young age, that when you do whatever you do, it's always about where it came from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, for me as well, when you're getting into the Britpop explosion as we had, I mean, so we're the same age, 94. Definitely Maybe comes out, and it was just, you know, Park Life came out the same year, and then you get into 95 and Pulp, Different Class, and then, you know, Oasis just getting absolutely huge. And so, but it was a case of, okay, you read an interview and they would talk about, I literally went out and bought a Best of the Who and a Best of the Jam on the same day because, oh, the Who and the Jam, I need to listen to those. I didn't know which one was 60s, which one was 70s. It was just right, oh, that's two of the bands I need to listen to. And it was just, it had to be done. You had to do it to dig back into it. Otherwise, you know, because they told you to, right? And
that's why.
If Noel tells you to do it, you do it. So,
yeah.
No.
I can still remember the first time that I heard because in 94, that probably would have been it was when grunge got weird. Yeah. So there was Nirvana, you know, some people will tell you that they didn't, but that is what everyone listens to.
Yeah.
And on the tail end of that, in 93, 94, you had the copycat bands that were just awful. It was like a manufactured, kind of sludgy, I don't know, it was gross. And I remember really hating music. And I heard Live Forever, and it just sort of cut right through everything. And I was like, who is this? You know, and they look like me. They look like my friends, you know? Baby, I don't really want to know. I got it gross. I just want to play.
That was it. I mean, that was it for, I think what made a big difference over here was just that, yeah, this wasn't like Axl Rose, you know, or these sort of huge stars that were separate, you know, especially in the early years. And, you know, we talked about the fashion and stuff. You look at the fashion of, you know, that now, you know, the brothers are very well turned out, and it's Paul Smith, and it's, you know, it's these big labels. But they were wearing, you know, Umbro tracksuit tops and, you know, like just check shirts from, you know, like from the supermarket or whatever. These were just lads. These were just lads that you might see. But, and they actually were, you know, they weren't, you know, they were very working class, and that really spoke to a lot of people, because you didn't hear that, you know, and you'd hear bands being interviewed, and it wasn't, you know, you could suddenly hear these people talking. This is like hilarious working class lads taking the piss out of each other, swearing. And shit, yeah. This is cool. This is so cool. You know,
I loved it. You know, I remember the one thing too about that comparison is when I saw, I would see, you know, Slash and Axl Rose, and I liked Guns N' Roses when I was a kid, but I couldn't understand. You know, I was like, I'm not gonna ever wear American flag tight spandex shorts. So I was like, this is not happening. If I show up at school, I'll be dead. You know? I mean, especially where I come from in New Jersey, like, you'd be dead.
Yeah.
You know? You can't wear that. I wear a hat. Like, hey, I'm in homeroom. Yeah, look, check out my time on the weekend. So, you know, when I would see these bands and I'd see Oasis come out and I saw Blur come out, especially I remember seeing them and just being like, well, these guys are just wearing T-shirts and, you know, they're wearing some slacks that that's kind of what we were already wearing. And I was like, with the tracksuits too, the Adidas, that was like a big thing.
Yeah.
That really hit kind of home, because that was one thing that we had that, in, you know, I guess it came from like the 80s Beastie Boys thing, but like everybody had Adidas and it was real cool because they were cheap and everybody could afford them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the zip up, yeah, we'd call it like a zip up top, like that was definitely part of the uniform. And it's, I'll tell you what freaked me out. I was at a music festival last summer called Truck Festival, which is just down the road from me, the Manics headlined. And they had a like a vintage clothes stall, and it was selling kind of these zip up tracksuit tops from the 90s. And I was thinking, that's not vintage. That's 90s. I've still got mine from.
Yeah.
I still wear it. But yeah, it was. It is vintage. It's 20 years ago. You think, Christ, yeah, it is. Madness.
Well, news to the world. We're old now.
Yes. I know, but
it's vintage now.
It doesn't feel it, but yeah, I suppose it is. It's like I just a big name drop here. But when I interviewed Tony McCarroll, and he said that you know, this guy Brian Garcia is, he's the big Oasis collector in Texas, and he was trying to buy a pair of Tony's jeans off him that he'd worn in the Live Forever video, and Tony just still wears them. You know, he still wears them, but like, because there's still a pair of jeans that fit, so he still, you know. So, you know, it's just one of the bizarre things, but
that's amazing.
But do you ever get that? Do you sort of, I mean, when you finish clothes, you know, do you just take them down to your local kind of charity shop or whatever? Or do you think, oh no, well, someone might, if it's something on an album cover or something like that, someone might want that?
No, I've never thought that. I mean, we put them in a trash bag. I mean, there's like a bin where they do like a donation, and we've done that since. That's just what you do when you're done wearing something, or if you get something and it doesn't quite fit right, and you know you can't alter it, you just go and you donate it. So I've never thought I should probably hold on to this, you know.
Well, there you go. Whoever's at the, you know, whoever's getting clothes from that local area where you're dropping them off, they need to like.
Yeah, I mean, go through the bin, because there's some new shoes in there sometimes. You never know.
But that's it. You need to autograph them or whatever. There you go. That's it. But anyway. But
yeah.
But yeah. So back in the, let's carry on talking about the 90s, eh, shall we? So when So Oasis come through, you hear Live Forever, it means a lot to you, but what else, what other bands, I mean, even American things that were really affecting you in sort of as a teenager, and are you then getting into playing music as well at this time?
Yeah, I think 94 was when I had already started playing guitar, and that was when I sort of had a little bit of a grip on it, so I could play along with the songs that I liked. And I found that, again, with the Guns N' Roses thing and everything, those bands, and even Pearl Jam and things like that, the guitar, I couldn't play along. It was too hard for me to do. But, you know, I could play Song 2 from Blur, and I could play, you know, at that time I could play Wonderwall and all these things, so, because they were more chords, you know?
Yeah.
It was a little bit easier to play, so I could find the sheet music in my local record shop, and then I would come home and I would learn the song. So it had more of an appeal that you didn't have to be an amazing guitar player, which at the time, that was probably the difference between me continuing playing and giving up.
Really?
Because I saw that, well, you don't have to be Slash in order to be a guitar player that makes a living out of playing guitar.
Because, I mean, Noel creates a great sound, but he's not a super proficient, you know, Joe Satriani, is he? He's a sound, you know, decent rhythm guitar player that can then play a bit of lead, but he doesn't need to be anything else, because that is what is absolutely perfect for that sound.
Yeah. I mean, however, though, I will say that from a guitar player's point of view, Noel does downplay how he plays guitar, because I've seen him countless times live, and I've watched him play, and he does play better than your average guy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, he is a good guitar. Like, the little solo, if you ever try to sit down and learn the little solo at the end of of Don't Look Back in Anger, it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is hard. So,
well, I'll tell you what.
Have some talent there.
I'll tell you what, Edge just found that out at the weekend. I don't know if you, I don't know if you've seen the footage of it, but Noel got on stage with you too, and they played Don't Look Back in Anger. And,
oh no.
And Edge absolutely butchered the solo. It's really bad.
Whoa, did he really?
Yeah.
That's not surprising to me though, because, you know, I feel like the Edge has a thing, and he does that thing, and, you know, he probably shouldn't vary from that thing, because he does it really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you what, I'll drop a clip in here. There's a British comedian called Bill Bailey, who's he does a lot of music based stuff, and he does a really good kind of demonstration of the Edge.
Now, you know that band U2, right? They've basically got this one sound, haven't they? Yeah, right. So, without these effects, they're nothing, right? It's just all effects. Even a troll-like figure can recreate them. I'll give you a demonstration of a catastrophic technical failure at a U2 gig, right?
And to be fair to The Edge as well, he's also admitted it. On that guitar documentary that had Jack White and Dave Grohl and things, I can't remember what it was called now, but Edge is on that.
Oh, It Might Get Loud.
Yes, that's it. And I think it's from there where Edge is demonstrating the riff from the start of Elevation. And it's just literally like playing two notes. But when it goes through his special kind of magic Edge box, it's like, it sounds epic.
Yeah.
But you strip that away and there's nothing there.
It's true, but that's the magic of the Edge, is that he does this thing that no one else does, and it's just, you can't duplicate it.
No, he is. And I got a bit of abuse from people, because I was sort of taking the mick out of Edge a little bit after I saw that, and the people were, you know, standing up to defend him. It's like, oh, come on, it's the Edge, man. Like, he's an absolute legend. Of course, you know, of course we respect what he does. His sound that is, you know, been such a huge part of you know, one of the biggest bands of the last 40 years, but, you know, you can't argue that. But you listen back to that and he does butcher the solo, but, you know, but fair enough.
I'm going to have to watch that today.
But check it out. But where were we? Why did we get onto that? Oh, we were talking about guitar playing. So, I mean, you mentioned there about you've seen Oasis countless times. I mean, when was the first time you kind of went to see them, Brian?
Oh, well, no, actually, I didn't see. I saw Noel play.
So, oh, okay.
I missed it, because where I grew up, there wasn't, it was a little bit tough at the age that I was when they were around to get anywhere, so there wasn't really a train system in New Jersey where I lived. It was a little tougher to get around, so if they would play, I wouldn't see them, but I've seen the High Flying Birds a few times, so that's kind of where I came in.
Ah, fair enough. And what about, have you met any of the guys before?
No, we I opened up last year a show that I was playing, like, two bands before Noel was playing at a festival, and he was standing about 20 feet from me, and I saw him walk in, and I was just like, and I all my, you know that feeling where your time stops, and you don't go, what do I say? And then you go through the Rolodex of the things you should say, and they all sound dumb at the time. I mean, what was I going to do, like, be like, I wish I had your hair. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what to say. Like, you know, because that's the first thing that comes to mind. You look amazing. And he just, like, you know, he probably slapped me right in the face. So I didn't say anything to him because I was scared. I didn't want him to, like, burn me.
Oh,
you know,
no.
I've read too many interviews where he just scalded somebody.
But I suppose the difference is, as well, if it's a fan, you know, if you're like a fan and you're not necessarily a musician, or, you know, you would just be, you go over as a fan. Whereas I suppose you'd be in a kind of a funny position of like, oh no, you know, I'm important. You know, I'm quite famous as well. You know, so when he goes,
and
never,
he's like, sure you are.
Yeah,
you know, sold 30 million albums. He would say, you know,
you have to bring.
And then he'd be like,
Yeah. You have to take your gold disc or something with you, you know, anywhere you go. It's like, no, look, I did. Yeah.
Hey, I know Bruce Springsteen. Hey.
Yeah, look, here's a picture of me and Bruce at Glastonbury. Look, check it out. Oh dear. On the you know, I didn't know whether to mention about the boss actually, because I mean I know it's a comparison that you get quite a lot, and you know, and obviously it's you know, he's come on stage with you before and you've opened up for him and things. But so I mean, I was just going to say more that, you know, the way, I mean, I'm a massive fan of Billy Bragg. I don't know if you're aware of Billy Bragg's work or a big fan of him, Brian.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I had his record, The Basics, when I was pretty young.
And oh wow!
He was doing it on his own.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't believe that he was just making records with the guitar.
I saw two shooting stars last night. I wished on them. Satellites is wrong to wish on space hardware. I wish you'd care. I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for New England. I'm just looking for another girl.
Well, no, I was going to say, I you know, I love Billy Bragg. I grew up with him, and not literally. It's just my brother is like 11 years older than me, and he had all this stuff. And yeah, and for me, you know, it's you've got that line of like Guthrie to Dylan to, like, you know, to Springsteen, and Billy Bragg's in there, and I think you're in there as well. It's I mean, I haven't dug into your lyrics enough to really pull through like how political you are, but often what I'm looking for in people is like what Billy Bragg calls in Upfield the socialism of the heart, you know, where it's like you don't have to sit there and say, you know, vote Bernie Sanders or whatever, but it's like, or whatever, wherever your political affiliations lie, but it's about, you know, having a message that means something to people, that you believe, that you're hoping to connect with people at that level. And I think that, yeah, I mean, that always means a lot to me. I think that comes through in Oasis, and obviously Billy takes it to the extreme level because he is so overtly political. But I think that, you know, you've definitely got that. And I just wanted to say, is that, I mean, when you're putting lyrics together, is it just naturally, or is it something you're deliberately trying to evoke?
Well, I think it comes the connection there with your average day to day. That doesn't ever leave you. Like when you come up like that, and you have this sort of almost like a worldview of it's all together or nothing, you know. And if we're not together, then none of it matters. Because if we're not relating to each other, and we're not writing for the bigger, you know, you write things. I don't even, you know, it's something that you don't sit down and say, like, I'm going to write for the big picture, and I'm going to write so that the masses understand what I'm saying. It's almost like you're only sitting down writing for you, but what you find is that you're, at least with me, like, I feel like I'm very common, and the thoughts that I think are common thoughts. And I find that everyone around me and the people that I interact with, they all have, there is this thing that runs through all of them. It's just sort of worried about the sum of it, rather than small factions, or, you know, saying like one party versus the other party or anything like that.
Yeah,
we kind of brush that aside and sort of look at the world as more of a whole than in little groups, you know, which I think benefits.
Yeah, no, definitely, man, that's great. Yeah, I really appreciate it in your music, and I think that, and as I say, I think that's part of the appeal. That's why people care, I think, isn't it? Is that you can hear that. You can hear when people believe it, you know. You can hear when people mean what they say. And, yeah, no, it's cool. Good. I tell you what, man, I really want to leave enough time to do these questions from your fans, because, you know, you know, I think a lot of, I doubt whether enough people sort of, you know, if people are going into interview, the journos and stuff, like professionals, they probably don't do this. So, you know, as I say, the podcast, as we do it, and the community of fans that we've got, it's about inclusiveness. It's similar to what, you know, as we were talking about with the music, and it's about everyone's in it together. We're all, you know, people help me out, whether it's finding guests or, you know, doing little gig reviews for me and stuff. So, you know, that's really important to me. So let's crack on. So, I'm just going to fly into some of these questions, man. So, you know, pass if you want to, but, young robot on the Reddit says an obvious one. Can we ever expect a Gaslight reunion?
I mean, that question, I think, is as unknown to me as it is to anyone else. It's one of those thoughts where I think people think that you have more sway in the vote than maybe you really do, because it's a collective thing, you know. It's four people,
yeah,
that have to, you know, they have to feel that what they're doing. It's like what we were saying. It has to be valuable and feel like it's from the heart, rather than just doing it to do it. And if it's not, then you have to just wait it out until that comes back again. So I guess the direct answer would be, I don't know, because it's much, you know, it's much like any other thing. When you do something that you feel is precious, which I do feel the band is precious, and I look back with a lot of fondness in the band. And none of us, I think, would want to spoil that in any kind of way. Yeah. So if there was a center that we were all coming upon saying, like, all right, you know, this is what we all four want to do and charge forward, then sure, mm-hmm. you know. And if not, then I don't think we would risk damaging the integrity of the band.
Well, fair play. It's funny. It's similar to the Oasis side, isn't it? I mean, what was your thoughts? Do you think Oasis should get back together?
Again, though, it's the same answer, because I feel like that was a band that had integrity, and they sort of spoke to me as a kid and where I was coming from. And I think that if they don't feel, I would the thing that I hate to see more than anything is like the circus version of the band, you know, like when you can tell that they don't want to do it. Yeah. And they're just kind of going through the thing. And that is the worst thing to see, because then it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And then Young Robot also says, what was the inspiration behind the song Handwritten?
Oh, that was the... that was actually all the songs that... It's what we're talking about. It was that community of people who sort of live... You know, they live by... you know, songs and the words and they that kind of keeps them going. And that it was about doing things from what you feel in your heart and letting that be the only guide that you have necessarily, whether that fits in or doesn't fit in, with whatever the common thought is at the time or with the times or anything like that. So that whole thing was written about that community of people, that I found that were like myself, which was the audience of the band. So that kind of was the us, you know. It's always, that's the thing about the songs, is even if it's I, it's always us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we waited for sirens that never come, and we only ride by the moon, every word handwritten.
That's great. JCJ26 says, do you plan on seeing Liam as he tours later this year?
Yeah, I mean, if he plays in New York and I'm home, sure, I would definitely go see him. I mean, sometimes I just go to see what he's wearing.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you follow Liam on Twitter, and do you enjoy his Twitter comments?
I don't follow him, because I don't want to hear him call Noel Potato anymore. I get upset. Because I love Noel so much. But he's really, that's just Twitter, though. Liam's Twitter is the funny as Twitter, for sure.
It is. It is. Cool. What else we got? Have you seen the Supersonic documentary? And if so, what was your favorite part?
I saw it a million times, and I love it so much. I think that the part that I gravitate most is when they're talking about where they came from and why they do the things they do.
Yeah.
And obviously, I related on a much smaller scale to the conversation that Noel said about Network when he was like, we reached a peak, that should have been it. I mean, on such a smaller scale, obviously I've never played anything like that. But to me, I know what that feels like, that yeah. feeling of like, I cannot do it any better than this, and this is the moment, and you should just stop, because it's only downhill from here.
Yeah.
And I know that people get so passionate about that. Like, I've gotten passionate about it with bands, too, where you want them to keep going. You're like, keep going, keep going. But it's just, there is a stopping point. Every good thing has a moderation point. And if you can't take that temperature, it will spoil, and it will be not good. And it's so hard to make that decision.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. No, fair enough. Thank you. And, what album would you recommend to someone who's new to Oasis?
I mean, to start with, definitely Maybe.
Yeah.
I think that it's like, that's what the cool kids say. But truthfully, my favorite album is What's the Story. I know I'm not supposed to say that, but it is, because I love it.
Yeah. No, fair
enough. But if we're talking starting, you have to start at the beginning.
Do you think you have to do the journey? You have to go on the journey?
Yeah, you got to, because it's just the way that it happened. You can't take it out of context.
Yeah, no, that's true. Good shout. Here we go. The Whimsical Bard says, I've noticed that a lot of Gaslight Anthem songs are connected in terms of their lyrics. They reference each other. Blue Jeans and White T-Shirts and Casanova Baby was the first one I noticed. How much of that do you expect fans to pick up on, and how much of that is something you do when you write just for you?
It's funny, because I think that sometimes why it happens is because you're always talking about your own story and your own journey. Sometimes you reference points in your own journey that have changed or have somehow morphed into something else. So the songs, me, band, I would still are connected, because I don't look at songs as like a singular, I don't look at them as like singular. Records is singular. Now I'm saying that, I actually can see a thread through all of them, that where they all kind of connect in some way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's when you're going through like a photo album. That's what it feels when you're writing the songs. You know, you're sort of taking stock of everything.
No, that's cool. And Whitney also said, do we have a date for when the new album may released, and maybe a single or a title? I'd be happy to, if you want to give me the exclusive for that, Brian.
Actually, don't have any of that yet. We're still kind of in the so when we usually get that stuff when you turn in the record and it's all mixed and everything, then you start getting like the release dates and the things, and then you have to do the recording class.
Good. All right. What have we got? FP1JC says, which Oasis lyric does he think is the worst on paper that sounds great in a song?
Oh man, that's tough.
That's just bizarre. I don't quite.
Yeah. Well, let me say this. I think one of the best ones is the whole "You Ain't Ever Gonna Burn My Heart Out." I love that. That's my favorite.
Rogue Flesh says, "How good is the Samuel Adams Oktoberfest beer from the UK? Sin that Brian loves it, but never been able to try it. We share a joint passion for pumpkin spice lattes."
That's my time of year, so I love it very much.
Cool. And we've got Developera says, I met him in Dublin and was a babbling mess. Please apologise to him. And his question is, could you ask him to tell his interpretation of the 59 sound?
The interpretation of the song?
Yeah, and well, other people have then jumped in and sort of saying, oh, it relates to a guitar amp, a 1959 Fender Bassman. Is that what that relates to?
Yeah, that's where I got the idea.
Oh, cool.
The song's much different. It's more about, I guess, it's really about that passing into adult and the things that you leave behind when sometimes people are cut off too quick from their youth and their life, and when things stop suddenly, and you kind of don't, you know, that everyone thinks they have this like life before them, and sometimes that's not the way it is, and yeah. that's really a tough one to swallow.
Cool. And we had a question here, I think it was from Grandpa Batman on Twitter, who said, did Springsteen know the words to 59 Sound when he came and played with you at Glastonbury?
I'll tell you this, there was a few stumbles there, and I can say that because he's my friend, but there is a few stumbles, and but the next day he knew it much, much better.
Cool. Lol Noobs says, what is Brian's injury he sings about in the line, I got an Irish name and an injury?
Oh, that's count them. There's but it's not a specific. It's not a specific wound, say.
Fair enough. And so Sadie Elnora 92 says, Rosemary and Honey Magnolia, two of my favourite songs from Painkillers. I've noticed both songs are told from a woman's point of view. What was the inspiration behind those songs, and why did you choose to write them in that way?
Well, the big thing about that is you always get sort of, at least in America, there's a lot of feeling that it's a little bit macho, so it's not so obvious that I don't say about it. But what I'm trying to do is, you know, I had a song that mattered to me, and I felt that it was better told from a woman's point of view, and I've never thought that it was a strange thing for a man to sing from a woman's point of view. Like, I never felt that meant anything strange at all. It just never occurred to me that would be weird. So, you know, it's an important thing that everyone's included in everything, and it's not, that's the thing about music. There's no closed door policy. There's no, if you believe in, you can't come in. There's none of that. It's just everyone is welcome. And, you know, I learned that from Bruce. That was the thing I learned. He did a lot. So that's where I learned it.
Yeah. No, I know that I know from your songs, there is like, songs in the first person, there's like, you know, letters, epistolary songs, I don't know if you call them, but yeah, it's just interesting. I think it's just mixing it up, I suppose, and sort of what making it interesting for you as a writer, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's tough to describe something when you're in your own, you know, when you're saying I, me, me, me. So sometimes to put yourself in another person's character will give you you're not going to get it right, but you can sort of imagine what someone else's perspective would be.
Yeah. What's the plan then for the recording? Any idea of, just give us an idea of when the release of the new album might be out?
I would say that it would probably be out, if I had to guess, just from prior experience, I would say like right at the beginning of the new year. That's what I would say. But there'd probably be music before then.
Yeah.
So there would probably be something, songs released and, you know, maybe like videos or something before then.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. And are you going to drop a few more? Should we just, keep an eye on your Instagram for these little more snippets dropping in, yeah?
Yeah, especially as we finish up, because, you know, when you get to the final levels of the song, when you're adding it, you know, you put in little clips just to give people a taste of what's going on. You know? It's fun, man. Everybody's a fan that's watching, and I think that's cool. You know, I would want to know what Noah's doing, you know?
Absolutely.
So I just think, no, why not? Let them in. Like, they're watching you, and it's awesome. So I think it's really cool that they're watching.
It is cool. And so we'll leave it. So, yeah, I always end with a song, so I'm going to put you on the spot now. So what song, what Oasis song do you think you'd like to play at the end of the episode?
Well, you know what? I think I'm going to play one for the missus. Her favorite is The Importance of Being Idle. So that's the one I'm going to go out with.
Really? That's interesting. That's not about you, is it?
I know. No, it's not about me. But that's the one that she loves that tune, and she plays it all the time.
Wonderful.
Cool.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll play out with a bit of Importance of Being Idle, which is obviously a brilliant track. But Brian, thank you so much for your time today. I do really appreciate it. And get off the phone, get back into the studio, start crafting some more of those beautiful songs.
Thank you very much.
So there we go. That was Brian Fallon. Great to speak to Brian. Really enjoyed that interview. So a few other bits we're going to do just before we call it a day over here. A chap called Jacopo Legomassino dropped me a little review over for the U2 and Noel gig. I think he may have been a little bit worse for wear as well while he did it, so it's quite entertaining. So here he is.
Mate. First of all, thanks again for everything you're doing with the podcast. I love it. A thing like yours was really missing online, where you can listen all the thoughts of a real Oasis fan, and all the interviews have been biblical so far. So thank you so much for that. I was at the U2 gig yesterday night. It was a fucking great show. Even if you like U2 or not, you cannot argue that they are a really amazing band live. And Noel played great as well. I loved it. And you could see on stage a lot of chemistry between him and Gam. And Chris Sharrock is a fucking great drummer, but we already knew that. Anyway, I was a bit disappointed with the set list. Almost all the same song as last time I saw him in Italy, back in Italy, a couple of years ago. But anyway, I was waiting for Listen Up, to be honest, and some other B-side. But it wasn't the case, and probably wasn't the right place to play those. And what was that fucking polo shirt he was wearing? I'd love to hear Liam's opinion about that.
So thank you so much for that. That was really, really good. And if you are listening and you'd like to feature on the podcast, then just get in touch. You know, drop me an audio message and I'll play it on the podcast. As long as it's interesting or funny or whatever, you know, feel free, fire it over. A couple of shout-outs. We have two new patrons, which is Michael and Dana. And thank you so much to both of you. And they have both subscribed at the $5 a month level, which means once you're in excess of $3 a month, you get a bespoke song. So we are working on that at the moment, and that you will hear that in a future episode. Both sounding pretty cool at the moment, so yeah, look forward to that. And the other thing to say over on the Patreon, that's a really good place to just keep an eye on. I have recently done a sort of a monthly blog update article on what's going on in the world of the podcast, who we've got coming up, and a bit of behind the scenes of how we've got hold of the various guests and things like that. And also our contributors, so that's Kyle and Richard have both done a couple of articles as well. So definitely worth going and checking those out. But that's all today. So thank you for listening to the Oasis podcast. A special thanks to our Patreons, Casey, David, Fraser, Mike and Dana. You can become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where I post articles by myself and the wonderful contributors Richard and Kyle. Support at $3 per month or above qualifies you for your own bespoke song. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast. Email me at oasispod@gmail.com. T-shirts are available at TeePublic, and you can subscribe and review us on iTunes or via Audioboom. As ever, stay in touch. Stay engaged, stay young.